starting. Hold on.
Blog Talk Radio.
blessing it is. What a blessing it is. Hello, everyone. This is Wardell Fodge Jr. from Solar Records Radio. And man, oh, man, it is Friday. And today, you know, every Friday on Solar Records Radio, we celebrate the sound of Los Angeles Records. And I'm so excited because I have two of my brothers that we were really blessed with. As a matter of fact, Kevin Spencer, the lead singer of that song you just heard, and probably the co-writer, I'll find out in a second, and the producer. And then you also have T-Ray, our road manager from back in the day. So you know what? I just got to bring these guys on and say hello, hello. Are you guys there, T-Ray, Kevin Spencer?
Yeah, yes, I think I'm here.
Enjoying the music.
Yes,
am
you
I
guys
on?
Are here. Yes, you are on, Kevin. How you guys doing?
Just like you can hear me.
All right,
fine.
All right.
How you doing, Kev? Everything's all right.
Good hearing your voice, and Wardell's also.
Oh, likewise,
yeah,
man.
All the time. We heard your voices. We heard your voice, and I heard Wardell's voice every day.
Hey, there you go. Hey, so just real quickly, I just want to give a shout out to our listeners around the world. Much love to you guys, and thank you so much for tuning in to Solar Records Radio. And Greg, thanks for chasing Kevin down and getting him on the show today. We appreciate you. Much love to you, and hope you feel better over there. I hope you didn't get COVID, but I hope you're feeling better. I know a lot of people are just going, like even the president of the United States got COVID. I mean, everybody's getting sick again. So I just want to encourage all our brothers and sisters around the world, you know, don't get too comfortable with this COVID thing, because it's still out there. So, you know, protect yourself and do what you have to do, and make sure you take your vitamin D and zinc. See, I've been there. That's why I know that. So please, yeah. I had COVID too. So, but anyway, everybody knows who Kevin Spencer is. So, but I got to tell them a little bit about T-Ray before Kevin gets into his story about what he's been sharing with the world for a while now. And so that's why Greg was like, come on the show and tell that story. He wants to hear it out of Kevin's mouth. But I want to talk about T-Ray just for a second. T-Ray, why don't you tell, you know, the people a little bit about you? Now, T-Ray, first of all, I already told you that he was our road manager, but prior to that, first of all, he's a cousin of the Silvers. But I want you to, T-Ray, can you go back and just tell us about your career as an athlete?
Yes, definitely a cousin of the Silvers. Loved what they have done throughout their singing career. I came from Memphis, Tennessee, and just love sports. When I first came to Los Angeles, I played baseball. I played a little bit of football, and I graduated to high school. In high school, I played all four major sports, football, basketball, baseball, and I ran track. I got a scholarship to USC in football and track, and I was also recruited by UCLA and several other schools. Went to USC. I ended up getting injured the first year that I was there, so I had problems trying to get back, but did a good job of getting well. Then I went, make a long story short, I went to, they call them the Commanders now, then they call them the Washington Redskins. I went to that team with Coach Lombardi, who I just adored and loved, one of the greatest coaches in the world. After that, I've coached at numerous high schools, being a head coach in football at Fairfax High School, Crenshaw High School with Coach Garrett, and Fremont High School. I've coached at most of the junior colleges. I have I coached with Coach Carroll, administrator, and coach at USC. I have worked with great thoroughbreds out at Santa Anita.
that's oh wait that, don't skip over that one. That one's a beautiful one for me. To the thoroughbreds.
What's that?
You're training thoroughbreds. What are you doing with thoroughbreds?
Thoroughbreds. I started out being a hot walker. That's when you take the horses out and walk them and warm them down, warm them up, and then I help the grooms, and so I was like an intern with the groom, getting the horses ready, and an intern semi-trainer, learning how to horses and all that, and it was just a beautiful thing. That's one of my passions, race horses, and I just loved it, and so that brings us up to now.
Amen. And I thank you. Thank you so
much. You used to do that one day with me. Get me up and have me run the stairs and stuff while we were on the road. He was treating me like I was a horse.
Oh, so that's why. Kevin's talking about T-Ray as our road manager. I guess Leah made T-Ray our road manager. And so when we were on the road, the Solar Galaxy of Stars tour, T-Ray was the guy that was waking us up and making sure we didn't get left behind. See, that's the good part.
Go down to the lobby, but you have your luggage down there and load it on the bus.
Right. Load it on the bus. Yeah, he was good at not just talking the talk, but he walked the walk with us. And so we loved him for that because he made sure that we were good, even if he had to carry our luggage because we were too slow getting on the bus. Yeah. But you... Are you saying, Kevin, that T-Ray made you work out? He didn't make me work out.
And we get together before the shows and whatnot. And in Canada one time, we were in Montreal getting ready to do a TV show. And T-Ray had me on the campus of a Montreal university. We were going around the track. But he was making a habit of it, getting me up and getting me to do stairs and, you know, and do a little bit of trot, just staying in motion while we were on the road. But I was the only one that was out there with him. I don't know where everybody else was, but he got me.
Why was that?
Sometimes we wouldn't get together and do it. They had their kind of own times, and so I would do it with him, and then I would do it with someone else at another time, and all. I tried to keep them.
You were cheating on me.
Kevin thought he was all his. I used to work out too. I worked out with Walter from the Whispers. We played tennis.
Walter couldn't work out hard.
Yeah, Walter was good. Walter, not Scotty.
Okay, I apologize, not Scotty.
Yeah, Walter was
good. Well, I know one thing, you worked out on those drums. I used to love to watch you work on those drums, man. You could go.
Oh, man. We were really truly blessed. I want to get to this story that Kevin has been sharing, and I know that the listeners want to hear about this story. But thank you, T-Ray. I appreciate that compliment because I really enjoy playing. My whole life was in all about drums since I was a little kid. So when I, you know, at that age, you know, that was like our prime, right? And so you got all these talented people around you, like Kevin and Leon and Ricky Smith and, you know, just a Pepper Reed. Oh, my God. I mean, you got all this talent around you that is pushing you and smiling and happy. And that they even gave you more confidence. When you have people that are up at this high level and they feel good about you, it makes you feel even better about yourself, and so you perform at a higher level just because of that love and support from your family and your team. But anyway, that's how we did in the studio when we were recording all those records for Solar. And so because we all were so supportive and loving to each other in every single possible way, we were just right there for each other. Even when one was failing, we didn't beat them up. We kind of leaned in, went outside, sat down, went, got something to eat, talked about it, and let's go back in and let's do it again and get it right. And it was never a critical thing. It was just a very intense thing because the studio had to be paid for and Leon had a responsibility to get this stuff turned in. And as a group, Kevin and Dynasty, they had a responsibility to turn this stuff in too. And so it was a lot of pressure to get this stuff done. So it wasn't like we were just playing and having a good time. We were working our little butts off. But Kevin, you've been sharing this story about And the Beat Goes On. And so can you verbally express it as, you know, in the quickest way possible about...
Yeah, that, Greg, that's what Greg wants to hear. You know what, the funny part about it is the reason that a writer writes something down is generally so he won't have to talk about it, you know? Because people can pick it up and read and get the concise information. But I'll do it from memory. Because it'll always be there.
Well, you have me here with you to support you and stuff. And so what happens is that, you know, you write it down and stuff, and that's great. But now when you're talking about it, we can also feel, hear the passion, not just because you're an amazing writer. I mean, everyone tells me that. Man, did you see what Kevin wrote? I mean, they love your writing. So, but they can now also be able to hear the passion. So I think Greg is just trying to get a little bit more out of you.
All right, bro. But then get ready for it.
Here we go.
You ready?
Let's go. I remember Sunday morning.
What do you
want
to know first, though? What
Sunday
do you
morning.
Want to know first?
And the beat goes
Sunday
on.
Morning, we usually went to church. That's right. What we had to be. And my Spencer was adamant about that. About
right.
She sent a message to Leon Silvers through you and I. Leon, do not schedule sessions on Sunday because Wardell and Kevin have to be at church. And she was serious. She had us.
That?
We were on. I remember I was on the back porch and you were standing out there, and I was telling, and Mom was saying, for us to get ready, we need to be getting ready for church. And we were getting ready to go to Fort Knox, Norman Whitfield's recording studio on La Cienega in Melville.
Norman Whitfield's recording studio, not Studio Masters, everybody, but this was Norman Whitfield, the producer for
Temptations and
Motown. Yeah. So, so we were in his studio in Santa Monica, off of Santa Monica Boulevard. But go ahead, Kevin.
All right. So, you know, we got up early that morning, and I had that white van, and we took that van down to Doodoo Records, which was where Lakeside rehearsed right above this liquor store on Alsace and Adams Boulevard in Los Angeles. And we went up there, and we picked up the Quadra, and we picked up all your stuff, the drums, the keyboards. We picked up quite a few pieces of equipment and carted those down to Fort Knox that morning and set stuff up. And we were all there ready to go. And I didn't know what we were doing. Well, maybe I had an idea because we had practiced And the Beat Goes On in the rehearsal hall a couple of times. And Gene Dozier was there. And Dean Dozier, I thought that he was a writer on it because he was there so much. And he was playing the Quadra. He was playing that wham, wham. And I remember he was playing that part and Ricky was there, but Ricky was the one who actually ended up playing it.
Right.
Once we got into the studio. And so I was always under the
That's
impression.
Ricky Smith.
And I was under the impression that Gene Dozier had something to do with the writing, but he didn't. It was Steve Shockley, William Shelby, and Leon Silvers that did the writing. Well, I know that now. But once we got there, I just remember that Leon after we got set up, Leon had it set. And we were sitting pretty much like in a round where we could all see one another. We always recorded it as if we were playing live. We had eye contact. We could see one another. And you know, that's really important because when you're looking at another man, he's playing his part, you can urge him on, you can encourage him, you can smile, you can let him know, give him your approval about how, you know, how it feels, even though you can feel how you're playing together. But that morning, when we got there, and I remember Pepper Reed was there. He didn't play. Steve Shockley, you, Wardell, myself, William Shelby, Ricky Smith, and Leon, of course. And so we start running the song down. But every time that we started running it down, Leon would stop us before we could even get to a change or anything. He said, nope, it sounds like mess. You're all over the place. And it was Wardell's first recording session. And Wardell, he was dealing with it good. I mean, you know, he was dead playing the drums. But Leon was like, nope. You're slowing down. It's speeding up. Wardell, my man, you got to lock it down and get the tempo in. Don't let it speed up. Don't let it slow down. And he was on the rest of us because we weren't gelling that morning right away. And so I don't remember how we were sounding when he was complaining because we were just going off of the feeling. We're still learning the song, even though we know all the parts. It's the playing through it. You know, I don't think that we had actually played it enough to be locked in the way that he required for us to be. And so we start the song off. He counted off. And we start playing it. And as soon as we get the first verse, he said, stop, nope, you guys are all over the place. The tempo is up and down, this, that, and the other. He was complaining constantly. And that was discouraging because we had started the song off. We had started the song off so many times. You know, he counted it off, and we wouldn't even get to the halfway point. And he would stop us again.
Kev, and I know Leon was definitely a taskmaster, and he's like most athletic coaches that coach. They want perfection. They can see and hear things a lot of times that others, well, especially the athletes, can't hear. Wardell, like you were just saying, we call it in athletics, Wardell was coachable. He was able to take what the coach was given. And most of you were like that. You would listen. You'd sit back. You'd make your comments about certain things. But when somebody told you that you needed to check this out or do certain things, you would listen and comply. And that's what made it great. And that's why.
So just real quickly, we can't talk over top of each other, but we have a 5-second delay. I apologize to you guys. We have a 5-second delay, but we were kind of stepping on each other. But okay. All right. But the other thing real quickly is that I just want to interject in what Kevin was saying. But T-Ray, thank you for saying I was coachable. I think that we all were first of all, it was a gift and an opportunity and a blessing for us to even be there, right? So we all were listening with our eyes and our ears and our hearts. We were just, open to whatever we needed to do to make sure it was right. But I have to say this. I had no idea, not a clue, what Leon was talking about when he would say pocket. When he was in pocket, because I didn't understand the term. I was a new kid on the block because Kevin had already had played with the Silvers and Tony Westcott was the drummer for the Silvers. And so when Tony Westcott came back to Philadelphia and he told me what pocket, he was trying to tell me what pocket was. I had no idea what he was talking about. But when Leon decided he wanted Tony to come and be with Dynasty, Tony decided he couldn't go because he had been away from his family so long that he wanted to stay with his family. So he suggested me to Leon, and Leon said, okay, have him come out. And I did go out and I made the audition. So anyway, so this pocket thing that Leon was talking about in the session, I was still like, oh my God, this is another language. And I had no idea. But anyway, so Kevin, go ahead with your story. I just want y'all to know I had no idea.
And that's the whole thing about you, Wardell, is that you became the consummate pocket player. But also at the same time, you had skill that you had worked on that where you were able to say a lot of things on the drums. But Liam wasn't requiring us to say any more than what he needed to make that record.
Exactly.
And so all that, I would try to sneak in a lick on the keyboard and he'd be going, no, ragtime, Sammy. He'd tell me, don't play that. And then he'd have a William Shelby. I didn't know what William was playing. I just could hear the chord progressions. So I never looked to see, I never got up to go see where he was putting his fingers. I would just stay at my station at the keyboard and just hear the chord and find my own version of it, you know.
Right. I love Kevin on the acoustic piano. Lord, him and the acoustic piano was like a match made in heaven.
Well, Will and I, you know, Roy, that Leon used to come to me and say, sure will, what you playing? And I was going, man, that's your trademark. You don't share that with another keyboard player. I'm not showing Will nothing. I'm not showing him nothing.
Really?
And then Will would come sauntering into the room where we record that. And so he'd be standing over my shoulder watching me, you know, where I'm playing and stuff. And then I'm talking about, show him what you're playing. And I was determined. I am not showing this dude, William Shelby, what I'm playing. But Will was sharp, man. I'm going to tell you something. He just looked like, you know, he was happy-go-lucky. Will was focused and Will would watch what I was doing. And he wouldn't play the same thing I played. He would find the notes in between the chords and play a different version, a different inversion, I should say, of the chords that I was playing. So we never played the same exact chords, hardly ever. Yeah. You know, and I have to give credit to Will how special he had become to me because he made me sound better.
Awesome.
He would play the notes that I wasn't playing, but still he's playing the same, you know, the same chord, but in a different way. And he knew how to just look and figure that out.
Uh-huh.
And so when we would do that, it made us a team. We started becoming a team. So when we were doing And the Beat Goes On, I never saw what Will was playing. So the whole time we were in there running over it like that over and over, I was trying to find my part. You know, Will was playing ding, 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 ding. And so I was playing the clavinet. And I was trying to find parts that weren't the same thing as what Will played. Yeah. And so that's how come my part kind of bounces and I'm playing the clavinet. And then I found the pocket, as you said.
Yeah.
Literally, I found a pocket for that little clavinet solo that ding, 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 ding. And do you know, I've heard more people mess that part up. As simple as it was so pocket until it sounds like something that you haven't heard before. And actually, to tell the truth, nobody had done a part like that on a record quite. You know what I'm saying? Maybe somebody like a when they had Boogie Oogie in the club that played the part in the girls, you broke it down and they were playing. But that hadn't been done. but right, too much, right, you know, on a single.
Kevin,
is to just break
Kevin
it down.
Just
to
break.
Yes, yes.
Kevin Wardell, what I do know, you guys were so talented and in your craft and so passionate about it, and you were also so creative, and you played off of each other, and it,
mm-hmm,
was just a beautiful thing. I love going to the practice sessions
that
and everything.
That developed, T, because, well, Ricky and I had been playing together since we were teenagers. And so Ricky taught me a lot of stuff. Ricky is better than what we knew, because Ricky is a multi-talented instrumentalist. He played the Hammond B3 organ, and he'll take you straight to church. Ricky have him up shout, and he also
play the drums.
Oh yeah,
yes, and
drums.
The drums, and then later on, she started picking up the bass, because I started off with the Silvers as a bass player, and I used to get tutored by Louis Johnson of the Brothers Johnson. I'd go over his house, and Louis would allow me to come over there, and I'd sit up with him for hours, and he would just show me different bass licks and how he was playing it, and he would take my hands and my fingers and my thumb too, and show me how to strike the strings and how he was getting that sound. And so after I had put all that work in on bass, man got a hold of me, and I'll take that to the bank, Wardell. Told me, he announced to me, I'm going to be playing the bass. And so I was accustomed to playing the bass, not keyboards. But once he heard me play keyboards, he said, I didn't know you could play keyboards like that. And I was still learning from Ricky Smith, to be honest.
Mm.
And so I said, yeah, I can play him, but I'm a bass player. He said, you're going to be playing the keyboards, because I'm the bass player now. And I was like, I was so unhappy with that. I was going, how he gonna just stop me from playing bass and put me on keyboards? So that's how I ended up playing keyboards on all the stuff, because man wouldn't let me play the bass anymore. And
well, you know, go ahead, T.
Well,
oh my
because,
God! Just think about
the chords, and it was beautiful.
Yes, absolutely.
You do what you have to do. And back then, we were all about cooperating, because none of us wanted Leon to be fussing at us about our parts, and I didn't want Leon to have to say anything to me. I'm gonna be honest with you guys.
Oh yeah, well,
I tried to make sure I had my parts down and that I wasn't making any mistakes, because you know a mistake means everybody got to stop, Wardell. I mean, if it was just a little something on you, we'd have to stop and say, all right, from the top. And I'm going, we almost played the whole song, and then he said, do it from the top. The nerve of the guy.
All right, so hold on, wait. Let me just tell you guys something. And this is the funny part for me, because I felt this unbelievable pressure. Kevin keeps talking about taking it from the top. But the real truth of the matter is that once Leon was aware that everybody really knew their part, but we humanly would make mistakes, then the most important thing at that point was getting a good drum track. And so we had to get a good drum track so that we could move on. And so because without a good drum track, you have nothing to work on. The foundation's got to be right.
I never envied you.
I know you didn't. I felt the pressure of having to make sure I did at least my part right, so I could get out of that room and get out of that pressure of the pressure cooker with Leon Silvers, because it was like a crock pot in that studio. And so
we couldn't go any further. The rest of us could not go any further until your part was right.
Exactly. And couldn't go any further, couldn't go anywhere. They had to stay right there. And so we would get my drum part done. And I'd be like, Leon said, okay, cool. Drum part's cool. And so then we'd start to do overdubs. And then Leon would take everybody in individually and fix their part. But he had to have something to build on. So the second thing was the bass. And so then, we would do Leon's part, make sure his part was tight. And then he would start with his keyboard. Get the keyboard parts right, and then the guitars, and just so that's how he would build the songs from scratch. And it was, I'm telling you, it was a pressure cooker. But let me just play the song that we were talking about this whole time, and then we'll come back. We'll come back on the other side of the song. Let's take a listen to "And the Beat Goes On" by The Whispers. We'll be right back.
Just like fishing in the ocean, there'll always be someone new. You're not the best now. Girl, you
Yep.
All right. And there we go right there.
Wardell, Kev, before you say anything, the intricate musical parts, just unbelievable. I mean, beautiful individually, and then when it was together blending in, oh, man, I just love that song. And the kick drum, you had the kick like I don't know what throughout the whole song to keep that up. I know that was difficult and hard. And then here come the whispers singing. Oh, man, what a beautiful song. You guys did a great job.
And another thing, we got to make an honorable mention to Steve Shockey. Steve Shockey was the person that when we were recording this song, we had gotten a little down and hearted because we had to start over so many times. And Steve started doing everything he could think of to keep our spirits up. Like, you know, he's a person with an upbeat personality, and he's comical, you know, too. Uh-huh. And so he was cracking jokes and stuff, and we would have our heads kind of hanging down. And Liam was starting us over again, and Steve started clowning a little bit to try to get us back because we were taking it a little too hard and too serious. And so then Liam just stopped, and he said, let's take a break, y'all, and then we'll come back and try this stuff again. And we took a break, and we went out to the parking lot. Well, Dale, I know you remember this. I had that white van, and I was sitting in the van, and we were out there maybe 10 minutes at the most. Then called us back in. And he said, all right, let's hit it again, y'all. And the first time, that first take, is what ended up being that record. We came back in, and it was like we were different guys. We came in and we started interweaving and locking that groove down. And I remember when we started it off, I was waiting, Wardell, for Leon to stop us again, and he didn't stop us. And then we got to the change. And he kept letting it roll, and I said, he's not stopping us. And then we went to the breakdown and the bridge where we do all the in and out. We had certain instruments come in and out. Had Will and I coming in and out with each other. And it rolled all the way through to the end. And I couldn't believe it, Woody. I couldn't believe he had stopped it.
I was so excited because at that point I knew that I was done as far as that song was concerned. And so when Leon said,
out the box.
Exactly, because we did another song. So I was like, oh, okay, great. I mean, I was so excited. But don't forget, we were really young, and this was the first song I ever recorded. So
were you 21 yet?
Yes, I was 20.
Were you 21 yet?
I just turned 21, and so I was so elated. I felt so good, but at the same time I was in shock because I'm still trying to get over the fact that I'm working with these guys. These guys had, you know, like Steve Shockley was in a famous group already. Lakeside. I was like, you know, and so it was just like, I was just like still trying to figure out all this stuff that's happening around me. And Leon Silvers, you know, from the Silvers, you know, and I'm trying to think of, at the same time, and this is a little bit too much detail, but I just want to share it because it came to my heart. But over.
You were on a fast track, Wardell. Fast track.
And I have to say that the human part of me remembering where I came from in Philadelphia, all my friends back there was wondering if I was going to fail or if I was going to succeed. So I felt this pressure.
Looking for you to come home. Exactly. They were saying, so they could say, see, we told you.
Exactly. And so I work. And so for me, it was mission accomplished, you know, and then when he, because when he said that, and then we did the basic track, and then he wanted to go in and start doing another song. I was so in heaven. I was walking on air. As a matter of fact, when you guys went outside to the van, I stayed inside because I was so trying to figure out. I was just me and the drums. I was like, come on, drums. I was talking to the drums. Because I really wanted to make sure I didn't let any of you guys down. It was not just Leon. It was all
you did.
Yeah, well, so anyway.
Do you know what I remember one day?
What's that?
I said, you know what I remember about that session that day?
What's that?
Was that after we had gone through And the Beat Goes On and whatever it took to finally get it right. By the time we did that, when it came to Out the Box, that was a piece of cake.
Mm,
playing
yes.
Out the Box,
well,
I barely would.
Yes, yes. You know, but I think it's because once we got past And the Beat Goes On, we all felt a little more comfortable. At least I did. And I was ready for the next
song. I know.
And,
yeah, that's why I barely remember Out the Box, because it was like cutting through butter with a warm knife.
So we went into the studio probably around 10 or 11 o'clock that morning. And I remember,
it was overcast that day. It was overcast that day, William. Remember,
and
it was like
finished,
it was going to rain, but
finished,
it never did rain.
Yeah. I don't. It was raining inside of me. I was a mess.
Understandably.
Yeah. But I got to say.
I did not want to be you. I felt sorry for you, William, because he was so hard on you.
Yes,
even
and I'm glad.
Even
that
was, do.
That's right. That's what a good coach does. They hard on you, like T-Ray was saying. You got this, you know, he's got this driving and drilling and making sure you get it. See, because without that, you know, it sets you up for failure. You need somebody to be hard on you and to make sure, and to say, you appreciate this later. You might not right now. But you'll appreciate it later. Me being an athlete, running track and gymnastics and all that stuff, I knew that what he was doing was the right thing, to be hard on me. And I had no problem with him being hard on me because I wanted to be successful. I wanted to succeed, you know. And so my whole gig, even after I got comfortable with Leon, even after I discovered what Pocket was, I, at that point, never wanted to let him down. Never. I did everything
I hated more than anything else. Wardell, I remember Leon used to put the click track on, and you had gotten to the point where you had started to say in the studio, say, no, I don't want the click track, take the click track out of my headphones. And you became a human click track. I don't know how you did that. I don't know. You might want to tell people how you acquired the ability to become like a human click track, your own inside of yourself, your own internal clock.
This is what happened. When I first got to California, I stayed with Leon for a couple of weeks before I moved in with Mom Spencer and Kevin.
I remember.
So, but while I was there for those couple of weeks, I slept in the studio. The studio was in the living room at Leon's house. And I was on the couch, right? And I'm laying on the couch. And so he had a metronome in there, and it was just the light. It wasn't on, but the light was going back on, just kept going all night long. So it was dark in there. So I said, oh, that's what he's talking about right there. That's the pocket thing right there. And so I started, every night I would do tricks with the metronome. So I would say every time I open my eyes, I won't see the light. And then I would do that, and I kind of keep doing that until I really, every time I open my eyes, the light wasn't on. I was playing those games with that machine. And then after I accomplished that, then I said, now every time I open my eyes, the light will be on. And I would do this until I fell asleep. So that's how I started learning what pocket was, just playing with that light with my eyes and just putting in my head, pocket, this is it. And it was just, that's what I did. I don't know if that made it. helped me with my pocket, but I remember doing that exercise every night.
It
for
worked.
2 weeks straight. And so, but anyway, so it was, it's hold on. Listen,
that's
I have a question.
That's why you didn't want the click track anymore. Because I remember that we came in to do a track one time and you were adamant. You said, no, Leon, I don't want the click track. And at first he was insisting on it. And you said no, you kept saying no, I don't want the click track. And he just said, I guess he got tired of going back and forth with you. And he said, okay, then we're going to kill the click track. And after that, I never remember that click track being used again anymore. It was all
you. I'll tell you what it was. So I know the song. I'm not going to tell the song because I don't want people to get upset about it. But the song was a Dynasty song, right? And so so this song, the click track to me had no love. It was just tick, tick, tick. So there was nothing.
Right,
It had no love. And so when I heard the music without the click track, all the instruments had so much love to give, and I was enjoying that. And the click track was an irritant. And I was like, I don't put that thing in there. It's ugly.
It's killing the vibe.
So that was, it was in the beginning when they first had click tracks, when they heard, so it was cheap sounding. It was cheap sounding. You know, later they got really fancy with the click tracks and then drums and all that kind of stuff. But in the the late 70s, they started this little cheesy little thing. It was nasty sounding. Yeah. But anyway, I have a question, Kevin and T-Ray. I got a question from the listeners. And the question is, do you think the "And the Beat Goes On" is the Solar anthem? If not, which song would be the Solar anthem?
I'd say it was the Wine song. I called it that because it was
what
our
song?
First time "And the Beat Goes On."
Okay.
I called
so
it the Swan song for the Throwdown Brothers because it was the first time that we got in there and got seriously down to business and locked in. And it was the first time, and it still stands today. That track is like an example of what you should be doing when you're in the studio.
Yeah. That song, "The Beat Goes On," it stays with you, and I think it was maybe the most popular. There may be a couple of others. What Kev was saying, "The Beat Goes On," you just remember that, and it just takes you there. Solar sound.
It's just a standard, T. That track set the standard for it. The rest of what happened with Dynasty playing the grand tracks in Solar became, it set the standard, and the bar was set so high until the only place it was for us to go was up.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Okay, so I have another question, Kevin. Real quickly, I mean, it's a statement, actually. And they were wondering if you could talk about it a little bit since you were the one. Now, when we got together, we went to Bel Air to the Silver's house.
Oh,
And "Make That Move" was a song that was created upstairs in one of the kids' bedrooms. I don't know who it was. In somebody's bedroom, and we were up there working on "Make That Move." But they want you to talk about the keyboard riff that "Make That Move."
No.
That keyboard, that piano part was
something in its own. It was magical because once you and Will and I, and even Ricky Smith was in Ricky Silvers was playing the guitar, and we had not added Steve Shockley's part yet. But while we were up there, I remember that Smith and Shelby and I, that we had to find a way to interweave ourselves, you know, because when I heard that Will do that ding-ding-ding-ding, ding-ding-ding-ding, and then Rick was going, womp, 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 and then I started doing the, what I ended up doing on the acoustic, that dun, 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 dun. I got that, that little trill that I do in there. Right. Yeah, Wardell, that's right. That's right. That's it. That's what I remember hearing.
All right, all right. So there you go. So
that was perfect. That was perfect, Wardell. You've done it again, my man. But that was perfect because that's what I remember hearing was Will and Ricky playing that, and that's what spawned me to do those chords like that. Mm. And after that, Leon just started playing the bass line, and that's a classic bass line. That doom doo 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 doo. And he would let me breathe, and he would rest, and then he would come back in, and that was it. And we could feel it. We could feel it, and you were locking it down. But, you know, you could feel that song. We didn't know it was going to be the hit and the popularity that was going to come with it. Right then, but we could definitely feel one another.
So
I definitely could feel that there was something special happening.
Well, that's at that point, guys, you got to know that. So Kevin and I were in college as well all this time. We were so we were in college and we were in the studio recording. We were and we would leave school and go straight to the college
and go straight to the studio.
Studio masters, and then we start recording this stuff, right? And so I remember I already heard it from the beginning, but when we started practicing over at I can't name this on Western. Wilshire Fine Arts. It was the ugliest rehearsal studio in the world, but they called it Wilshire Fine Arts. The building was ugly, but the owners and their children were beautiful. So that was the fine part. The family was fine, but the building was, they were always working on it, always doing this something. But anyway, so then we go, after we would rehearse there, the song, then we go over to Studio Masters and record the song. And so I remember when the words said, you only go around once in a lifetime. And so that right there, Kevin, made me do my hi-hat pattern, you know, with when I heard that, I was like, go around once in a lifetime. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And then Leon was like, yeah, that works. I was like, cool. And so it was just so much natural magic that was happening. But the magic, reason why the magic, and everybody's got to hear this, I'm talking to the musicians that record, the reason why the magic happened for us is because we were listening to each other. You got to listen. And because a lot of times people will play and they only, it's all about them. And they just play. And,
right.
And you know, but if you, we were listening to each other and getting ideas from each other, like Kevin said, when he heard Will play this thing, it triggered that thing. And, you know, we kept triggering.
Right.
So that was why the magic, I believe, happened for us over at Solar, because we
And you have to leave enough room for the next man. You know, you have to let a groove breathe. You know, you can't fill it up and keep on playing a bunch of stuff. You have to lay back and listen to the other man and listen for the space. Give him room. Leave room for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to let the music breathe. Yes, sir.
Kevin Wardell. And listening to you, I'm like, I'm all for technology and what's happening in the world and different things. But to be honest with you, there is nothing like the humanness getting together.
Yeah, the real thing.
And playing, doing the real thing.
That's
not
right.
Just the picking
real
it off.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so that's the other thing too, T-Ray. Thanks for saying that, because it's the heart versus the machine. And yeah. so, and the okay. heart always, the reason why the heart wins is because that's, we all are human and we all have hearts.
Yeah.
And so it's easier to feel my heartbeat than to feel a drum machine's beat. Because
yeah.
you naturally can feel the beat of a human. We feel the same. We roll the same way. You know, we bounce the same way. And those drum machines, they're cool and everything, but after a while it becomes annoying. Because it's the same exact
yeah.
thing over and over and over, and it's too perfect, so to speak, and so, or if you will. And so you need to you need to have a little bit of real human feel. And I think that's what makes a big difference in the music back in the day versus the music we hear
yeah.
today. Because when I go into a club nowadays, and I'm standing there and I'm watching the people, and the studio, like the floors would be kind of maybe – a little full, maybe two-thirds of the people, maybe less than two-thirds, maybe half. But when I go up to
yeah.
that DJ and say, can you play this old-school song or can you play this one? And then they start playing some old-school stuff, the floor gets so packed that they can't stop playing old-school stuff. So
it does.
And the age group doesn't matter. The younger people love that feel, that natural human feel that comes from the old school. And that's why my kids they love old school so much, but they probably can't technically tell us why. They just do. But I believe that's the technical reason, because it's human feel versus the computers. We have more questions. Man, they're coming in, guys. Let's just play a little bit of Make That Move, and then we'll be back and we'll talk on the other side. Answer the question on the other side. We'll be right back. Shall not.
So many times I hold
There you go, Kev. I got to tell you, Kev, that part you played on the piano right there?
Yes, sir.
You taught, that's how I learned how to play piano, from you. Like, yeah, I know, sir, because that's how I play piano. So I learned how to play from you being at mom's house and both you on the piano. I would sit on the piano. So Ricky taught you, but you taught me. And you didn't even know it.
Okay. So I know now.
Yeah, that's how I learned how to write songs, right? Because I had to learn how to play the piano so I could start writing
songs. Were so adamant about, you said, Kev, you would get me, you know, we were living together at the time.
Right.
And then you, from the time you got up, you said, write something with me, Kev. Write something with me. And I go, he's the drummer. What do you know about writing?
Oh, man.
Yeah, he don't play no single notes. But then you taught me each drum, the tom-toms and everything, all had a pitch. They had to be tuned. Had to be tuned.
Right. Absolutely. That was
I never realized that until you came.
Oh, yeah.
Tuning the drums.
Each drum is like a key on a keyboard. Yeah, I need to have other notes, too. Don't want to just hitting on the box like at my dad's gas station. I'm just hitting on the box. I'm like, I need some notes, man. I got to get a drum set, Dad. And so, but anyway, so here are the other questions. Kevin, T-Ray, how you doing, first of all? You good, T-Ray?
I'm good. I'm enjoying it.
Okay, T-Ray, before I get to the question, but can you tell us, when you were on the road with Dynasty and doing that, what was the most enjoyable part for you being on the Solar Galaxy of Stars tour?
Well, the most fun part was just dealing with all the artists, seeing everyone get together at either the airport or the bus or whatever it was. going to the hotels, checking in.
Right.
Getting
to the arena. And we had to get to the arena early.
Yes,
before the people started coming.
For sound checks and all those types of things. And the enjoyable part was when we got all that done, the instruments taken care of, watching the performances. Oh, it was beautiful.
I gotta tell you guys that, you know, T, for me, because I was very young then, right? But there's a thing with T-Ray in his eyes. I could look in his eyes and they tell me the truth all the time. And so he was, to me, like a protection. I knew that how he looked, if everything was all right or if it wasn't all right, I could look in his face. You could see that his eyes tells everything. And so just knowing that if he looks like he's smiling, he's happy, I know we're good. If he's not smiling, not happy, I know we got a problem and we got to figure out what it is. And sometimes, like my favorite thing on the tour, outside of playing, of course, was being able to drive the limos. I used to drive the limo, the Dynasty limo, and I would tell, what's his name, get in the back with Kevin and them, and I'll drive. Because he would stay up.
Brad
would stay up. He stayed up too late trying to hang out with us, right? So,
yeah.
His eyes was just as red as his hair. I'm like, dude, how you going to drive us? You get in the back. I'll drive. And he was like, you want to drive? I go, yes. And so that was one of my favorite joys, just, you know, outside of playing, of course. But anyway, T, I just have to take my hat off to you. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And what you're saying is such an experience because we were traveling and going from city to city, from little town to little town and everything.
Right.
And
And it was a joy. It was beautiful meeting the different people. I mean, the same, but they had different accents and just a lot of things that went on. It was a beautiful experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Kevin, this is the question for you.
Okay.
This one is, they want both of us to talk about it. So it has to do with a song that you and I wrote, and they want you to talk about it. They want us to talk about it. So the song that Kevin and I wrote is right here.
Okay.
All right. So, so anyway, oh my God, I just love the way
keep
that
on loving
going.
Me.
Keep on loving me. Y'all got to keep on loving me. So, Kevin, let me start because I started with the foundation and then you carried it home. So I'll start. So I started writing this song, right? And I was so excited because Leon is the one that told me to just go write. If you want to write, go write. If you want to produce, just produce. I'm like, I can't just do that. I mean, without your, I didn't know I could until he
somebody's
told me.
Somebody's permission.
Right. I was like, okay. So I started writing and I wrote a few songs. First started off with Dynasty, writing for Dynasty. And then I ended up writing this song for The Whispers. I didn't know it was for The Whispers. I just wrote it and stuff. And so I just really enjoyed the groove of it. And it was because it's simple. It's my simple funk. It's not like Ricky's funk or Kevin's funk. It's my simple funk that I was able to write. And then Leon handed it over to Kevin, and Lord have mercy, Kevin, the lyrics on this song are some of the best lyrics on any of my songs. I love Kevin's lyrics, the way that he writes. I don't know how he does do what he does, but it's absolutely amazing. So, Kevin,
I say my prayers. I say my prayers before I start.
So what did you, when you heard the song, you had to come up with a concept. I already was singing Keep On Loving Me, but what?
Okay,
how
that
did
was
you,
the concept.
Yeah, that was, I wrote that part, but how did you, how did, the story, what the
I
heck?
Can tell you, I can tell
yeah.
you.
Tell us.
What happened to you?
Okay.
I was eating my lunch.
He was choking.
I think someone got in the wrong part. But anyway, I knew the concept was Keep On Loving Me. Then I told me that. Well, there he gave me that track 3 days before. And he said, yeah, Kev, he told me Dick wanted me to do the lyrics because, I was coming off of Emergency and that had done well.
Mm.
But when he gave it to me, well, Dale, I didn't do anything with it. I was just coming to the studio like we normally did, and I wasn't touching Keep On Loving Me. And then I was at the apartment. And the phone rang, and it was Leon Silvers on the phone. He said, Kev. He said, did you finish the track yet? And I said, and I hadn't touched it, Wardell. I hadn't even listened to it.
He's about to lie.
And I said, and so I told a lie. I told a lie. I said, yeah. He said, how much of it did you get finished? And I said, I just came up with a number. 3/4, he said. Well, you still got 1/4 to do. He said, how long do you think it'll take you to do it? I said, probably 30 minutes or 45 minutes or something like that. He said, all right, do that. He said, because the Whispers are down here, studio masters, and they're ready to hear it. And you come down and sing the dummy lead.
Oh,
I ain't had nothing to it. And I said, okay, I hang up the phone. I put my boom box on the kitchen table, had the tape, put it in, and I started praying to God. I said, Lord, in Jesus' name, I said, I cannot do this by myself. I'm waiting on you, Lord. I'm waiting on you, Jesus. And so I folded my hands. And I said, I'm just waiting on you, Jesus. And so, and when I was sitting there, and then I hit the play button for you, and the track starts playing, and I start feeling the track now, and all of a sudden it seemed like in my head a nice, gentle, quiet voice said, "Times get tough. You want to give it up." And I grab my pen, I pick it up, and I put it to the paper, and I put, "Times get tough, you want to give it up." And then all of a sudden, the next thing came in real gently. I heard the voice say, "Just can't let it go like that." And I wrote it down, "Oh, just can't let it go like that." And it kept going all the way. The first and second verse, I wrote down, I took dictation. I didn't write that word there. God wrote that. That's what I say.
Amen.
Because
Amen.
He told me what the words were, and I just took dictation. And then I had two verses. Then, you know, you had to do your ad-libs and squeed and then I did all that stuff. And then the phone rings. It's Leon. He said, "Yeah, Kev, I told you I was going to call you back." He said, "Man, the Whispers is down here waiting. You gonna bring this stuff down here in group form?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "So how soon you gonna be here?" And I said, "I'll be there within a half an hour." I was only like about 15 minutes away, but I took my time, didn't it? Because I didn't have anything like
late.
I wanted.
Right, right.
Well, not too late, but not too late.
Yeah, not late.
Late because it's close. I cutting it too close to the wire, but
right,
not
right,
because
right.
It ain't getting done. So then when I got there, Scotty and Walter and Nicholas and LaBelle,
they were all there. Oh, crap!
At the studio, sitting there waiting in the control room in there.
Oh,
used to be. And so when I came in, you know, Scotty, oh, you know, he's a cut up. He said,
"Yes, he is."
"Yeah, I knew you was going to come in here with some shit." You know, he was cussing him. So then Leon had I think it was Bob Brown or something like that. If it wasn't Bob, it was Steve Hodge. Set up the mic. I went in there and with the lyrics I had on the little notebook, and I started singing the dummy lead, and Leon liked it. Now, when you do a song like that, Warrior, you're the only one who knows how it goes. You don't
know if
other people, you don't know if they're going to like
it. You know how it's going to receive.
They might
listen
to it and say, "Oh, this is, yeah." They might listen and say, "That's a mess," you know.
Right, right.
So I went in there and I started doing the dummy deed. And Scotty and them started losing it. Scotty got out of control, Warrior. He said, "Oh, man," he said, "that's bad. I knew he was going to come up here with something, boy." And so then I said, "Oh, I don't have to worry. They do like what I'm saying."
Right.
And the melody, I had to do that too. Leon had some of the melody worked out, but he didn't have all of it.
Right, right.
And so I ad-libbed. And Scotty said, "I'm going to sing it just like that." He said, it's perfect just like it is. And so that's what ended up happening, where after you had laid the dynamite track with Leon, when I got the track, I had to do the lyrics in a half an hour, in less than a half an hour. And I prayed, and the lyrics were pretty much dictated to me by a gentle voice. And that's how that song
Amen.
Became. And then once we finished it, it was, as Dick Griffey, you'd say, "That's a smash hit."
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
And so
Wardell.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's what was so amazing about Solar. I mean, with Leon and Dick Griffey and all of you, you played off of each other and you had the passion for music. And you didn't need notes. A lot of times I would watch you and you'd just say, "Play like this," and you would hum or make sounds or whatever it is. And then you'd put it
to your instrument. I mean, it was a beautiful thing to watch.
Well, I just, before I forget, because I'm getting a little up there, I'm starting to forget stuff, but I want to say this, Kevin, the hidden story inside your story is that Leon Silvers, who the whole company was dependent on to deliver the goods, trusted you so much, Kevin. He trusted
you so much
to come in because of your history with him already. But he trusted you so much to come in there and sing the song for the very first time for the Whispers, because they needed that. They loved already the music, and they just needed to see what their part was going to be. And you went in there, and Leon never heard it. He trusted you without even hearing it.
He just told me to go in there and do the dummy lead.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Absolutely amazing. And that's what made us an amazing team, because we trusted each other. And it started with Leon trusting us.
Yeah, and
you had great temperament.
Yeah, we got along pretty good.
Kev had great temperament. But I know back then, you guys were patient. You listened to each other, and that was important. And you respected each other.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right about that, Keith.
Well, you know, guys, Kevin, that was amazing. I didn't even know that all this time. And so that's something else you got to put in the book too, because it's really important that people get to know the story inside the story. And you're good at
And you
doing,
know what
you
know. It was about, Wardell?
What's that?
I made it about Kevin's mother, my son's mother, Denise, because a day or two after I had got the track, she came in the house, the apartment, and she said, "I want a divorce." And I said, "Whoever talks about the most is the one that really wants it." And she said, she was saying she wanted a divorce. And then I said to her, and I was thinking about the child, I said, "Man, give me a chance. Just keep on loving me at least until I can get things together." And that's the standpoint that I wrote it from, that times get tough. You want to give it up, and we just can't let it go like that.
Yes, amen. What a great lyric. As a matter of fact, let's take a listen to that. Wow, I love it. We'll be right back. Man, yeah. Oh, man, guys, you got the crazy.
You know what, Wardell?
What's that?
Us going to church and the things that they say to us in church, you know, that partner song that says, how many times I take for granted that I know I love a sound, you know, that's that safe and sound. And there was a gospel song that he said, Lord, lift me up, turn me around, put my feet on solid ground. And that's what I said. That loving feeling, put my feet on solid ground. It came from lift me up, turn me around, put my feet on solid ground. That's what God did for.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Man, oh, man, God.
Yeah, that's where that came from, Wardell. That's how that man came to be.
All right. Hey, I just want to just let you guys know that my partner, Don Fleming, is on the line as well. Don Fleming, say hello to Kevin, Spencer, and T-Ray is in the house.
Hey, Don. Mr.
Fleming. Hey, what's going on?
Everything
in a second, man. In a second.
All right.
So anyway, Don, we've just been talking about the music and stuff that was created and how it was created. And so I just want to thank Kevin and T-Ray for coming on and sharing their story, man. Oh, man. It's just been an amazing conversation. I feel so blessed, man. Thank you, guys. Man, oh, man. Kevin, T-Ray, let me go to you first. Any thoughts in regards to anything you might want to share in regards to Solar Records, you know, or, you know, I know you Leon's your cousin and stuff, and to watch that watch him go through the pressure of having to deliver the goods, and he did it continuously for a minimum of 5 years straight for Solar, What do you say about Leon, you know, and how he took on that task of being able to accomplish that goal?
Well, first of all, he's very, very young. And,
He's 26.
And he loved athletics and sports, and he loved the challenge. And he would definitely meet whatever challenge that there was. The Lord gave pretty much the whole family a musical talent, and they worked on it really hard. And Leon, in particular, very meticulous about what he does and everything, and he wants to win. And that's what he did. His work ethic was very, very strong. He worked day and night thinking about all that he could, plus trying to be as human as he could as far as who he was dealing with and how to push someone's button, how to lay off, how to be strong, all those types of things. And that's what helped him with making and creating all the great music that he did.
Awesome. That's a great answer. Thank you so much. Kevin, you want to answer that question as well? I mean,
I can answer what T-Ray just said. You know why you guys, I never once envied Leon Silver because he was a workaholic. Mm-hmm. He worked so much. Even after we was finished recording our parts, he would still be at the studio, you know, muting stuff in and out, seeing what worked together best, you know, to create the different breakdowns. And I never wanted his job. I never wanted to have to do like him. But every time that he was working, we were there, Wardell. So the irony is that I didn't want to do what Leon did, but I was steadily doing it because I had to be there with him.
Right.
You know, whenever he was doing what he was doing, Wardell, we were there. So here you got on one hand, you got a guy talking about, ooh, I don't want to be Leon Silvers. I want to have to do what he does. But here we are. Every day we came to the studio, we were doing whatever he was doing. And we were working just as hard at what we did, as he did, at what he did. And so we were there. We were doing and like what we had servers were doing. Yet we didn't want to. We didn't want to, you know, not the way he was. He was a workaholic, man. He was normal. There's nothing normal about Leon and his work ethic.
Yes, sir.
With that collaboration with Leon and his work ethic, he was able to deal with a lot of groups, a lot of individuals.
He was versatile.
You guys were right there, because anything that was coming out of Solar, you were the musicians that were making it happen.
And we had to be there.
So this is...
We were on what you call beck and call. Wardell and I could be at home. We didn't have cell phones and stuff like that back then. You had to be at home to receive the call to tell you, come down the studio, Masters. So we'd be at home, the phone would ring, and it's Leon talking about come down to the studio. And it's like, oh, man, I thought I was fixing to go see my girlfriend. I was fixing to do this. I was fixing to get... No, you fixing to go to the studio. That's what you're fixing to do, buddy.
Yeah, so we were on the job. We were on call like a doctor, and we weren't getting paid like that. We weren't getting paid like a doctor, but we were on call like a doctor. We were like, whenever Leon called, we had to go, because he was the leader. We all knew he was the leader, and we trusted him, and we loved what we see. This is the even if you had plans to do something else, and you went to the studio and did what you knew you had to do. By the time even in the middle, don't even have to be done. In the middle, you're like, I am so glad I'm here doing this, because you could feel history being made. It was the most amazing experience to be a part of something you know is about to make history. And I tell you, there's been many times Kevin and I have recorded songs, and then 3 months later, it was on the radio. And that don't really...
And sooner
always,
than that.
Yes.
Sooner than that. Well, you get 2 weeks.
Wow.
2 weeks.
Wow.
It was ridiculous.
Hey, Don, you doing all right?
You're doing great, man. It's one of those things when you just listen. Because there's so many great stories that you guys have. I'm on the road if you guys don't get a chance to hear the air in the background. But I just wanted to just listen to you guys just go. The question I did want to ask, actually, is all three of you, just knowing that the Leon Silver's acumen. Let me ask this: his brothers and sisters were pretty good with the pen too. Now, how much was that work ethic from him carried down to like the Charmaines or the Riggies? As far as their, Leon's acumen.
Yeah, I think they were trying to pattern themselves after their brother to a certain extent,
not to the extent
that he was, because he was hardcore, and I think that it just influenced. They were influenced by him because they could see he was coming up the ladder steadily, slowly but surely. And my thing was, when it was time for us to come together at Studio Masters, wherever we were at before, I knew I was going to walk in a room with a bunch of heavyweights. When I would walk in, I would see you, Rick, and I'd see Wardell, and Pepper would be there. These were the best of the best at that time. And I had full confidence. I knew we were about to do something. I knew we were about to do something big.
Yeah,
whatever it was, I knew that I could depend on you and Wardy and Leon. I knew that we were about to put something down that was very serious, and I didn't even have to know what the song was, because we were getting some things we wrote in the studio. Wardell, you can tell it.
We were
making up stuff in the studio.
The studio was also a writing place. Absolutely.
Check it out. I'm reading the studio.
There you go. So go ahead, Reggie.
about, you were talking about Leon and what he would bring and the Silvers. Well, it started, all of you have that type of history. The father of the Silvers, the mother of the Silvers, they both had musical
background. Yes, they did.
And they would spend hours with the kids. You guys, and I say you guys, all you musicians and everything, you have a history. You started young. You had a passion for music. You had a great work ethic. You'd spend hours and hours honing your craft and even and not knowing that you were just getting really, really good with all the hours that you spent. And all of you, all of a sudden, all these people got together that love music, that love people, that wanted to make a difference. And it was just a beautiful thing of all of you getting together. And
one more thing, Keith, do you know that when I met Wardell, and I already knew Ricky, you know, since we were babies together, we always were practicing and listening to stuff at a way higher level than the stuff Leon had us playing. We were listening to Stanley Clarke, George Duke. We were listening to stuff that was way ahead. Fusion music.
Yeah.
And we were actually on the cutting edge. We were actually able to emulate some of that stuff we were hearing by those jazz greats. And then when Leon was talking about what he was talking about, that was much easier to play than the stuff we were trying to play, because Wardell was offering to Tony Williams, the drummer, and Lenny White, and them guys were off the chain. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Rick and I were listening to Stanley Clarke and Mondre and a lot of other people, the one that used to work with Philadelphia International. I can't remember his name, but he did like Nights Over Egypt and Hurry Up This Way Again. I can't remember his name now, but he's so bad.
Musician.
He was. And he did that Hurry Up This Way Again. Da-ding. I mean, he was playing a key.
Oh, the Stylistics?
Yeah. But I can't remember the producer's name right now off the top of my head. But he
Dexter
was bad.
Wansel.
There you
go. Was that him?
Dexter Wansel.
Dexter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
My phone
mom.
We listened to all that
kind
of stuff. And we were listening to all this advanced music. And because when Wardell came, he was dead off into Lenny White's foot and stuff. And Wardell had a strong foot and a quick foot, too. And when I listen to the Dinah stuff, I hear Wardell double up on the kick. You know, and you know what I'm saying? Whatever we're doing. And I said, he's using his jazz influence. We were playing that R&B music, but we were using the influences from the jazz players that we had been studying before we got with Leon. And Leon was an engineer of that stuff, not that I could tell. He didn't listen because he used to call me Ragtime Sammy. In a second, he said, Ragtime Sammy, don't play that. But I was doing what I heard Herbie Hancock and Dexter Wansel and Mondre and all them guys doing. And Ricky used to always play some Chester Thompson for me. I go over and Rick would have squid cakes and everything else jumping off. What is
go
hip?
Ahead.
And I'm saying and Ricky would be sitting there on the Hammond B3 playing that stuff.
Hold on, Kev.
We're honored to have Freeze talking.
What's that?
Ricky Smith, is that you?
Yes. No, he's not here.
Is that?
No, he's not here. He just mentioned his name. Kevin just mentioned his name. But,
oh,
but
he
no.
mentioned it.
Yeah.
I wish he was. If he was, that would be
perfect, too. He was another one that was just so precise in what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky was just bad, period. You know, he played to your
breakfast. Still is. I want to also tell you guys that in the Silvers family, James Silvers.
Oh, James.
Had the air. He had the air and still does. And to this day, I talked to Leon about it not too long ago, and he was like, I don't even, and Charmaine was on the show talking about James's ear. Like, he hears stuff that the other ones, the other ones don't hear. He has this amazing ear for harmony notes and stuff. And even when they were on the TV show, and they were the little angels, I think that's what they were called, the little, so they were on the show, and then so the song that they were singing, Leon couldn't remember his note, and James was a baby compared to Leon, and James said, this is your note, this is your note, and Leon was like, how does this little baby know my note? And James told him, but they said that, Jonathan and Charmaine said the same thing. Leon and Charmaine both said that Jonathan could hear the stuff, and he would start one place, and he would travel through the harmonies as they were singing and end up someplace else. And it was absolutely amazing, like, how he could make this. See, he has a gift that's really deep. It's really deep, and they go. He's kind of a special kid. His brain hears stuff.
That's how I met Leon, Wardy. I met Leon because of James.
Okay, yeah. So we're talking about Jonathan Silvers. We also call him James. Right. Jonathan and James. All right, real quickly, we're getting ready to end. But, Kevin, there's a question for you before we have to end. The show is about almost over. So, Kevin, I just want to ask you this question from the listeners who know about you, Kevin, I guess, because they want to know what kind of trouble did Kevin get in with Jeffrey Daniels in junior high school?
Oh, Jeffrey Daniels and I had to go to summer school because we were talking in class, and Jeffrey Daniels was a character in junior high. I mean, he always had something going, and he used to get me to laugh in class. And the teacher knows that the two of us were always cavorting together. And so when the summertime was coming up, we both got notices that we had to attend summer school. And we were in the same class in summer school. But school, we got down to it, and Jeffrey and our class passed that summer school class with A's.
But he and I
we went from flunking to getting a straight A's in summer school. And so then that's how we passed on to the next grade, because that's what they were studying with us. If we didn't pass this class, we were going to have to repeat the seventh grade, because we were only 13 then.
Awesome. 13 years old. All right, guys. So listen, we run out of time. I want to give everybody some closing remarks. So we'll start with T-Ray. T-Ray, in closing, is there anything you want to say?
Yes, in closing, everyone, please enjoy the music, and also make sure that you are vaccinated and that you're taking care of your health and that you're looking out for others in doing so.
Amen. Thank you, T. We appreciate you. Kevin, in closing?
Okay. I would say, music is the kind of thing that it comes from a spiritual place. So, like, whoever is out there trying to, advance themselves in music, you need to pray, and you need to talk to God and ask God to give you an extra blessing. I don't know how other people that are out there doing what they do, how they mean, but lean towards prayer and God, and he'll give you and make room for you and your talent, and you'll find your way to where you're trying to go. He doesn't have a problem with us becoming musicians and stuff. There's music in heaven. It tells us in the Bible. There's music in heaven that men's ears cannot conceive of. So really, when we're here playing, we're borrowing a little bit of what God has in heaven, and he's letting you have a little bit of it to share down here. That's how I look at it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys very, very much for coming on. And God bless you, too. And we're going to, I'm going to finish out the show with a little bit of Midnight Star. And thank you guys so much, so very, very much. T, God bless you.
It was a pleasure listening to you guys. I can do this all day.
I forgot.
That's
Don
a compliment.
God, do you, Don Fleming, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, I mean, again, I just want to thank you guys for the wisdom of, again, I mean, 40-plus years, and you guys still sound young. I'm a little under the weather, you know, trying to get my voice back slowly but surely. But
you
thank you guys.
Don't worry about it. Nobody is emailing to you, so.
But again, I just love the wisdom, man. And again, being a kid, being 6 years old in 1980 and having, you know, just Dynasty and Shalimar and all of these artists, the Whispers and Lakeside and whatnot, just kind of be the soundtrack of my lives. And just hearing you guys tell these stories, to me, it kind of puts that that universal, everything comes around, you know, in full circle for me. And thank you guys for that.
Amen.
You're welcome. Right. Well, we're glad we were able to do
it. All right. And I just want to give a shout out to the listeners once again. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us here on Solar Records Radio today. I just want to pray for you guys. I pray that God keeps you. You have a blessed and beautiful Solar weekend. Don't forget tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Solar wants to dance. So we would like for you to tune in and work out. You know, we're going to do our cardio show tomorrow. So it's all up-tempo jams. For an hour straight, tune in and work out with us, have a good time with us, or just party, whatever blesses your heart. Also, Greg, thanks so much, man, for your amazing work, and thanks for staying on Kevin's back and getting him to call in and be a part of the show. We appreciate
it. How does he pronounce his last name, Wardell? Greg what? It starts with W?
Yeah, W. Wool.
Well, how do you say it?
Woolworth, right, Greg?
How great it is.
It sounds like, I keep thinking Woolworth like the store.
That's because that's the closest thing to Woolingsworth, maybe?
Yeah, Woolingsworth.
I feel bad because I don't know how to say his last name, and I feel embarrassed.
I do, too. I've been knowing him for the longest. And I just, Greg, you need to call him.
I don't know what your problem is, bro. Why you ain't got it down pat?
Greg said it's the best. He said this was the best interview ever.
I'm glad his first name was just Greg. I'm just glad I could say that.
All right, guys. Well, God bless all of y'all. And thanks again. We
I said Woolerscroft.
Woolerscroft. Right, that sounds right.
Hey, he can say that, and I'm going to go with him because I don't know what to say after Wool. After Wool, I'm going
to give him a nickname, Kevin. Give him like Wooly.
Woolingsworth. Woolingsworth. Woolingsworth.
Well, don't sabotage his name. Jeepers, creepers. All right, guys. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Good night, and God bless you guys.
All right.
Have a good one.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Mr. Clinton.